Blog Talk Radio.
Should have stayed a great unknown, like his father carving wood. He'd have made good tables, chairs, and oaken chests with a suit of Jesus. Best he'd have caused nobody harm, no one to love. Listen, Jesus, do you care for your race? Don't you see we must keep in our place? We are occupied. Have you forgotten how put down we are? I am frightened by the crowd. Oh, we are getting much too loud, and they'll crush us if we go too far. If we go too far. Listen, Jesus, to the warning I give. Please remember that I want us to live. But it's sad to see our chances weakening with every year. Your followers are blind. Too much heaven on their minds. It was beautiful, but now it's sour. Yes, it's all. Listen, Jesus, to the warning I give. Please remember that I want us to live. So come on, come on, he won't listen to me. Come on, listen, listen to me. Come on, listen to me.
All right. I love that. That tune. It's me, Dr. C. Robert Jones, Conservative Radio Report. June 21st, 2011, Washington, D.C. Today, the United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun. All right, let's get this party started. Today, we have some issues to address. It seems that NBC conducted what I like to call a probing maneuver on the American public. That is to see if they could, how Americans would react if God were omitted from the, from anything. You see, what would happen if God were taken out of the Constitution, out of the preamble, out of anything? How would the public react? Would there be concern? Would the majority of Americans pretty much go along with it? Where are we in terms of our religious faith, our beliefs? Are we still a Christian nation, or maybe not, according to Barack Obama? Because the president went across the globe and stated that we are no longer a Christian nation here in the United States of America. In fact, Obama openly mocked the Bible more than once.
So difficult for America to use the Bible to help guide our public policy.
Which passages of Scripture should guide our public policy? Should we go with Leviticus, which suggests slavery is okay? Or we could go with Deuteronomy, which suggests stoning your child if he strays from the faith? Or should we just stick to the Sermon on the Mount, a passage that is so radical that it's doubtful that our own Defense Department would survive its application? Folks haven't been reading the Bible.
Senator Obama, after you so arrogantly mocked and ridiculed the books of Leviticus, Deuteronomy, and the Sermon on the Mount, taking those passages of the Bible so painfully out of context, you then condescendingly stated that, quote, folks haven't been reading their Bible, unquote, as if the American people don't know what's in there. The real question is, do you know what's in there, Senator? For instance, did you not know that most Christians and historians agree that the Sermon on the Mount contains the most spiritually inspiring words ever uttered by Jesus Christ or any other religious leader? And as far as your sarcastic remark regarding the Defense Department not being able to survive the Sermon on the Mount's application, I can assure you, Senator, that Christ would never advocate turning the other cheek to terrorists and America's enemies, as your smug laughter so clearly implied. And did you not know, Senator Obama, that the book of Deuteronomy, which you also arrogantly mock and ridicule, is what gave us the Ten Commandments? Folks, all those condescending remarks distorting our Judeo-Christian Bible did not come out of the mouth of Barack Obama's pastor, Jeremiah Wright. No, they came straight out of the mouth of Barack Obama.
Folks haven't been reading the Bible.
Paid for by phforamerica.com.
Well, apparently those folks who haven't been reading their Bibles consist of one Barack Hussein Obama, who apparently hadn't been reading his Bible, only took selected passages out of the Bible in order to make his point. Well, here's the problem with that. The President of the United States speaks, and people listen. The President of the United States is the leader of this great country, or once great country. And a lot of folks follow his lead. They tend to, for example, let me give you an example. When Oprah Winfrey made a smug, condescending comment about the beef industry some years ago, beef sales dropped dramatically in certain parts of the country. And those farmers who
whose livelihoods depended upon the cattle industry and the beef industry, were outraged. And they complained bitterly. And Oprah was brought to task, and she apologized for the remarks. Well, when Barack Obama, the president of the United States, the leader of the country, mocks openly the Bible, and indeed God, there are those out there who will listen and follow his lead. And given that NBC, and Jeffrey Immelt in particular, well, he's in the White House every other weekend and hanging out with Barack and chilling, doing all sorts of things together, just kind of hanging. Well, Jeffrey's following Barack Obama's lead here, the president's lead, because according to Barack Obama, we are not a Christian country anymore. That we are a country of many faiths and many religions, suggesting that this great country was not founded on Judeo-Christian beliefs. Well, you know what? It seems that every time a politician or any other person of celebrity employs the phrase, America was founded on Judeo-Christian principles, the left, liberals, Democrats, mainstream media, and educators go ballistic, ranting and raving and infuriated that anyone would mention God in the same sentence with America. The liberals insist America is a secular nation, and God plays no part in the creation, forming, building, or operations of our great country. Let's take a look at that. Let's put that under a microscope here. Just for fun. Perhaps we'll all learn something here. The struggle with our original colonies and England involved a number of complaints, not limited to taxes, trade, political representation, freedoms, operation, and not in the least, the Church of England. Mike is rattling badly. Ouch, that's not good. Okay. You may have to switch microphones here, because this one isn't functioning the way I want. Let's see here. This is my best mic, too. Mic rattling badly. All right, well, let's... Okay, is that better? I hope it's better. Seems like we're having some mic issues here. Let's see, is that better now? I hope it is. Okay, so here we are. Bingo. I like the sound of that. Bingo. I hate it when there are technical difficulties with microphones and such. It causes a disruption to the show. All right, so where were we? All right. The preamble to the Declaration of Independence begins with these very stirring words, and I have them committed to memory. I have had these words committed to memory for a very long time. I can recite them in my sleep. Can any of you? The words are as follows. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and science, God entitled them. A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. And note the phrase, the laws of nature and of nature's God. The framers inserted a reference to God in the first sentence of the Declaration. If that alone were the only reference to God, it would prove America was founded on Judeo-Christian beliefs. However, the Declaration continues, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. In the second sentence of the Declaration, the framers state that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Now, with that section of the second sentence, the framers affirm their faith in God and, by their use of the term unalienable, acknowledge the and accept the power higher than man and government. The word unalienable means incapable of being surrendered, transferred, or taken away. In other words, God gave us rights that government cannot eliminate. Government cannot eliminate these rights. People, other citizens, other Americans cannot eliminate these rights. And as they try, we're seeing the rise in this country of tyranny. We're seeing the rise in this country of potential anarchy. And I was listening to Southern Sense show the other day, and then Freedom Wing show earlier today, and there were folks in her chat room on her show who thought that well, this wasn't a big deal. You know, I'm not too outraged about it. Well, in my opinion, you should be, because this was simply a probing effort by the left, just to gauge where we are in terms of our faith. And thank God for the social media this time around, because there was outrage. Outrage. And you know what? It hasn't gone far enough. Somebody should be fired for this. Why has no one been fired? Jeffrey Immelt himself should resign. This is a colossal outrage. And I think the pressure should be on now. Seriously. Now, the Declaration continues that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. In the third sentence of the Declaration, the framers state that governments acquire their power from the people. Our rights came from God, and it is the government's role to secure those rights. The framers never intended for government to meddle with our God-given rights or to wield authoritarian power over its subjects. The first sentence of the closing paragraph of the Declaration states, we, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America in General Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions. That means the framers appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world We're asking God for his guidance in seeking freedom from the king and his affiliated tyranny. What more do we need to ask? What more should we ask for? I mean, in my opinion, that says it all. But that's not how we're rolling, is it? No. Now, NBC says that they didn't want to offend anybody, that they removed God because they didn't want to offend anybody. Who was it they were seeking not to offend? Does anyone know? Who was it that they were seeking not to offend? Because, quite frankly, I'm offended. Is anyone else offended? Anyone at all? The call-in number is 347-884-8500. And we'll be back after this brief commercial message.
Sound the drum.
Sound the drum.
The drum.
Here we come. We are the new media. Freedom Alliance Media.
Freedom Alliance
Freedom
Media.
Alliance Media. Where the voice of freedom will lead you to the truth.
For great rock and great talk, go to www.freedommediaalliance.wordpress.com.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific. 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
We are Freedom Media Alliance. Freedom and entertainment defined. Find us on the web at freedommediaalliance.wordpress.com.
All right, that was pretty good. I like that. All right, so here we are. we are approaching a point in our history where we are becoming godless, where God is being removed from our great country. Now, Patrick Henry once said that this is all the inheritance I give to my dear family. The religion of Christ will give them one which will make them rich indeed. Patrick Henry, in his last will and testament, November 20th, 1798. Thank you, Blue Sky. I'm glad you appreciated it. So we're here in a point where I don't know. It just seems to me that liberals are stepping up their game here. In an America where we were once considered to be all right. I'm glad you liked the intro. I thought it was pretty cool, too. I'd like to go ahead and, well, we're going to talk for a moment about why liberals hate God. I know it that sounds extreme. Why liberals hate God? Recently, I was having a conversation over the internet with an agnostic from Missouri. And during our conversation, he accused religious people of being mean-spirited, hateful, judgmental. And I asked him if anybody in the country would, if everybody in the country would faithfully follow the teaching of Jesus, how many drug pushers would there be? How many cases of AIDS? How many battered wives? How many illegitimate children living in poverty? He was honest enough to answer, none. And I replied that such is the goal of the religious. Through eternal salvation, well, eternal salvation must be the ultimate goal. The conversation was instructive in other ways and led me to ponder the question as to why liberals hate religion. There is no doubt that the reason or the reasons vary among individuals. But it's important for us to realize that hatred of religion is inherent in the liberal philosophy, simply because of what they view as the results of religion. Over 200 years ago, the French philosopher Voltaire wrote, "Religion is the chief cause of all sorrows of humanity. Everywhere it has only served to drive men to evil and plunge them into brutal miseries. It makes for history an immense taboo of human follies." An influential 19th century American, Benjamin Franklin Underwood, explained further, "To many liberals, Christianity appears an unmitigated evil, a superstition which, although it had its origins in innocent ignorance and credulity, has been the greatest obstacle to human progress that mankind has ever encountered." Now, the atheist Robert Ingersoll said that the church had for 1,000 years extinguished the torch of progress in the blood of Christ. Unfortunately, he didn't know the difference between pure New Testament Christianity and the gross perversions of divisions of Catholicism and Protestantism. The point here is that
liberals hate God because if God is real, then so is Lucifer. If Lucifer is real, then so is hell. If hell is real, then all their asses are going there. And if they go there, the chances are they'll be trapped with millions of other liberals. And that's why we have a situation where there's a concerted effort, I believe, with this administration to make us or convince us that we should be a godless nation. Let me give you another example. Obama. Godless Obama wanted the name of Jesus covered up at Georgetown University, my alma mater. Since Georgetown is a Catholic, is Catholic in name, it did. This is understandable, of course, since the name of Jesus to Obama is like a crucifix being held up to a vampire. The ignorance of Obama knows no bounds in demanding that symbols of Christianity be hidden in his presence. Again, no surprise, right? As the forces of darkness cannot stand the light of truth, who is someone? Not a something. In Obama's case, the truth, that truth, is slapped in the face by a disciple of the devil who shamelessly quotes the Sermon on the Mount. Recalled that the devil was very good at quoting scripture in his temptations of Jesus in the desert. I wonder how many of my brothers and sisters out there who faithfully go to church on Sunday, you know who I'm talking about when I say my brothers and sisters, who go to church on Sunday, who worship the Lord Almighty and sit in those church pews and give their offerings at the end of the church sermon, approve of the fact that their president, the one they worship so much, goes to my alma mater, Georgetown University, and demands that symbols of Christianity, symbols of God, be covered up. How do you feel about that? I know how most people feel about it, but there's a particular segment of our country, our population, and you know who I'm talking about, who simply worship this man from the ground up. I wonder how they feel about Obama cozying up to Jeffrey Immelt. And Jeffrey Immelt, who runs NBC, GE, NBC, they're all in bed together. In fact, I think I am remiss because I believe that NBC was sold, NBC Universal was sold from GE. However, the influence is still there. Why would NBC omit God? Let me ask you this. Now, I know, I'm painfully aware of the fact that Ronald Reagan is gone. He's not coming back. He's dead. And no amount of wishing and hoping and praying is going to bring that great man back. But let me ask you this. Do you think that if Ronald Reagan, in Ronald Reagan's time, if God were even a network television station would omit God from anything? Certainly not the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence. Do you think that would happen? I don't think so. Well, let's hear from the great man's own words. Let's find out from beyond if Ronnie would agree.
Without God, there is no virtue because there's no prompting of the conscience. Without God, we're mired in the material, that flat world that tells us only what the senses perceive. Without God, there is a coarsening of the society. And without God, democracy will not and cannot long endure. If we ever forget that we're one nation under God, then we will be a nation gone under. If I could just make a personal statement of my own.
Now, could that be the goal here? Could it be that Ronald Wilson Reagan's words are ominous, prophetic? That given that this country was founded on Judeo-Christian values, that to eliminate those values would be to eliminate our will as a people. I mean, Freedom Wings show earlier today, Diane, the host of Freedom Wings, pointed out something very interesting to me. She said that once God is eliminated from our consciousness, once God has been removed from our everyday values, from our life, then the state, the government, becomes our God, giving us sustenance, the things we need, the hope, the change. And thus, the pathway will be clear for the government, the state, to take over. Is that interesting? I think it is. I think that we're living in very dangerous times here. I want to go ahead and play another clip from my, what I consider to be one of the greatest presidents in the history of the United States, Ronald Wilson Reagan.
Obviously, much of this new political and social consensus I've talked about is based on a positive view of American history, one that takes pride in our country's accomplishments and record. But we must never forget that no government schemes are going to perfect man. We know that living in this world means dealing with what philosophers would call the phenomenology of evil, or as theologians would put it, the doctrine of sin. There is sin and evil in the world, and we're enjoined by Scripture and the Lord Jesus to oppose it with all our might. Our nation, too, has a legacy of evil with which it must deal. The glory of this land has been its capacity for transcending the moral evils of our past. For example, the long struggle of minority citizens for equal rights, once a source of disunity and civil war, is now a point of pride for all Americans. We must never go back. There is no room for racism, anti-Semitism, or other forms of ethnic and racial hatred in this country. I know that you've been horrified, as have I, by the resurgence of some hate groups preaching bigotry and prejudice. Use the mighty voice of your pulpits and the powerful standing of your churches to denounce and isolate these hate groups in our midst. The commandment given us is clear and simple. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Whatever sad episodes exist in our past, any objective observer must hold a positive view of American history, a history that has been the story of hopes fulfilled and dreams made into reality. Especially in this century, America has kept alight the torch of freedom, but not just for ourselves, but for millions of others around the world. this brings me to my final point today. During my first press conference as president, in answer to a direct question, I pointed out that as good Marxist-Leninists, the Soviet leaders have openly and publicly declared that the only morality they recognize is that which will further their cause, which is world revolution. I think I should point out I was only quoting Lenin, their guiding spirit, who said in 1920 that they repudiate all morality that proceeds from supernatural ideas, that's their name for religion, or ideas that are outside class conceptions. Morality is entirely subordinate to the interests of class war, and everything is moral that is necessary for the annihilation of the old exploiting social order and for uniting the proletariat. Well, I think the refusal of many influential people to accept this elementary fact of Soviet doctrine illustrates an historical reluctance to see totalitarian powers for what they are. We saw this phenomenon in the 1930s. We see it too often today. This doesn't mean we should isolate ourselves and refuse to seek an understanding with them. I intend to do everything I can to persuade them of our peaceful intent, to remind them that it was the West that refused to use its nuclear monopoly in the 40s and 50s for territorial gain, and which now proposes 50% cut in strategic ballistic missiles and the elimination of an entire class of land-based intermediate-range nuclear missiles. At the same time, however, they must be made to understand we will never compromise our principles and standards. We will never give away our freedom. We will never abandon our belief in God.
Well, apparently we have, or perhaps our leaders have. The entire Pledge of Allegiance has been proudly passed down from generation to generation, and it has recently, 2008, 2009, 2010, been under attack. A few months ago, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid omitted the words "under God" from the pledge on the floor of the U.S. Senate. Now, the pledge has repeatedly come under attack in the courts, each time being upheld as a constitutional expression of America's Judeo-Christian heritage. And the Ninth Court of Appeals summed it up best. The Pledge of Allegiance serves to unite our vast nation through the proud recitation of some of the ideals upon which our republic was founded and for which we continue to strive. One nation, under God. The founding fathers believed that the people of this nation are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, indivisible. Although we have individual states, we are united in one republic with liberty. The government cannot take away the people's inalienable rights and justice for all. Everyone in America is entitled to equal justice under the law. Equal. Yet NBC believes that they can cut, edit, and sanitize patriotic expression. What they did not expect was the immediate outpouring of disgust and outrage by Americans on blog, Facebook, and Twitter, and thank God for that. Yeah, you heard me say it, God. Within 3 hours, an NBC sports announcer read a half-hearted, lukewarm, candy-ass apology
on air. Regrettably, a portion of the Pledge of Allegiance that was in that feature was edited out. It was not done to upset anyone, and we'd like to apologize to those of you who were offended by it. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, there were quite a few of us who were offended by that. It was a disgrace. Now, to those of you who did not realize the Pledge of Allegiance was under attack before, this is a wake-up call. The pledge stands as a tribute to our heritage, our ideals, and the sacrifice of those who have fought to protect our freedoms. Now, you know what? We cannot allow the desecration of our heritage. The ACLU will continue to fight to protect our symbols of patriotism from lawsuits, from attacks by politicians, and from direct assault by the media. The words of our pledge are sacrosanct, all of them. And that is the point here tonight with this particular show. Who among you are outraged at this outrage? I can't believe it. Oh, but I can. The Pledge of Allegiance has been butchered. Someone should be fired. Again, fired. And the President of the United States, who has consistently omitted the words Creator and God in many of his speeches, citing that we are no longer a Judeo-Christian nation. It's kind of like he stated that we are a Muslim nation, that we are a Buddhist nation, that we are blah, 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 blah. And here's the deal. It's kind of like not being an American anymore. Remember when we were simply all Americans? How many of you were alive when we were Americans? But now, we are Japanese American. We're Italian American. We're Puerto Rican American. We are African American, which is absurd to me. And don't get me started on that whole African American thing. But now that we have sectioned ourselves off here in America, with our little particular cliques, African Americans, Irish Americans, Italian Americans. Yeah, some would say that it's simply a celebration of our heritage. And that's a bunch of crap. We're Americans, plain and simple. Either you're an American or you're from somewhere else. Okay? But here we have a situation where the president himself is watering down who we are as a nation. We're no longer a Judeo-Christian nation, he said. We're Buddhist. We're several different. To water it all down means to weaken us as a nation. When we separate ourselves ethnically, we're weakened as a nation. When we separate ourselves religiously, we are weakened even further. Now, I'm going to play this brief promo and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. This is a pretty good promo for the Freedom Alliance media. Take a listen.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I'm 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I'm Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood in Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders Fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific. 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
We are Freedom Media Alliance. Freedom and entertainment defined. Find us on the web at freedommediaalliance.wordpress.com.
All right, we're back. That was pretty good. Now, as I said earlier, Obama gave a speech not so long ago that stated that we are no longer a Christian nation. And I think that when he made that speech, he opened the floodgates. Suddenly it was in vogue now. It was okay to say we're no longer a Christian nation. It's okay to admit Creator and God from the Declaration of Independence or from any other point where the word God or Creator goes. It's okay now. During my Christmas shows, I spoke to the war on Christmas, the war on Christ, the war on God. Apparently, that war has stepped up. When NBC states that they removed God, when they removed God from the pledge, that they did so because they didn't want to offend anyone. They didn't want to offend anyone. It was because they didn't want to. Does anyone believe that? Does anyone believe that NBC would remove God so as not to offend anyone? They would have to believe, even an idiot would believe that you're going to offend quite a few people by removing the word God from the Pledge of Allegiance. So who are they really not seeking to offend here? I mean, am I missing something? Are we missing something here?
Who were they trying not to offend? I'm offended. Are you offended, Richard? Are you offended, Cool Mike? Are you offended, Blue Sky? Are you offended, Tesla? Are you offended, GGT? Is anybody offended? Are any of my guests offended? Is conservative TNT offended? Is American Citizen offended? Because it seems to me that if we offend just one person with the word God, then we got to take it out. It's got to go. I recall a story where I was taking my my granddaughter to daycare, and it was the day before Halloween. And one of the instructors said to me that we were going to have a Halloween party, but one of the parents didn't approve. I forget her exact words. And so we're not going to have the party now. I said that, well, I approve. I mean, how many? Is just one parent that doesn't approve? And she said, yes. So I said, does that make any sense? What about all the parents that do approve or simply don't care one way or the other? She couldn't answer me. But the party had been canceled because one person didn't approve of the Halloween party. I complained, of course. And the next day, the Halloween party was on again. I guess because maybe I balanced out that one other person who was offended. So back to the question, who was NBC seeking not to offend? Southern Sense writes in the chat room, Obama's purpose to corrupt the USA and obtain socialism. Indeed, because just like the Soviet Union, who sought to omit God and religion, America is following that same example because, as was stated earlier in one of the other talk shows, the Freedom Wing show, if God is removed, once God is removed, once that obstacle of religion has been removed from our consciousness, then the government can take over and be our, or take the place and be our God. The government will be God. And Obama has stated that we are no longer a Christian nation.
Where we once were, we are no longer a Christian nation. At least not just. We are also a Jewish nation, a Muslim nation, and a Buddhist nation, and a Hindu nation, and a nation of non-believers.
Okay. Is that true? We are no longer a Christian nation. Why would he say that? Why is that important? Why is it important that we no longer be a Christian nation? What point is he trying to get across? The call-in number is 347-884-8500. Are we no longer a Christian nation? Or is it like Ronald Reagan said, those voices don't speak for the rest of us? Or could it be that Obama simply omits the Creator because he's afraid the Creator will usurp him?
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, endowed with certain inalienable rights, life and liberty, in the pursuit of happiness. That's what makes us unique. That's what makes us strong.
So the word creator was thrown out of there. Could it be that Obama seeks to be our creator? That, well, to have a creator other than Obama, well, that would be blasphemous. It just simply wouldn't be right. President Reagan said that we are one nation under God. And I did some research earlier. When Ronald Reagan evoked God so many times during the course of his presidency, no one was outraged. There was no call for his impeachment or removal. Because, well, we lived in a time where it was important. It was important. America was a different country. Take a listen to my guy, Glenn Beck, and what he has to say on this subject.
One nation under God, right? No. Mm-mm. At least as far as some of our Capitol Hill gang is concerned, we're not. An Eagle Scout in Ohio found that out for himself as he tried to honor his grandfather with a gift of a flag that had flown over the Capitol building in Washington, D.C. His grandfather was an Army veteran. Young man requested the inscription on the flag certificate mention his grandfather's love of, and I quote, God, country, and family. The Capitol office responded by eliminating the word God because they said it was a violation of the rules. So tonight, here's the point. America is one nation under God, and the day we forget that, we are all in big trouble. And here's how I got there. You don't have to take my word for it. Whether you look at the Pledge of Allegiance or the Declaration of Independence, you'll see our founding fathers chose their words carefully. God was not included by accident. But look, I am a member of a faith with a long history of persecution at the hands of the government. The Mormons, I don't know if you know this, are actually the only faith in American history to have an extermination order leveled against them by the government. So I'm kind of a passionate believer in separation of church and state. But at the same time, you can't deny the simple fact that America is largely a Christian nation. We were founded on the principles of God. In a recent ABC News poll, over 83% of Americans identify themselves as Christian. God is on our money. An oath to him is part of our judicial process. You can guarantee that every presidential candidate debating tonight is going to mention God's name at least once. Obama was God this and God that all weekend. So tonight, America, here's what you need to know. This is what I believe. There exists a creator who made all things and mankind should recognize him and worship him. Two, the Creator has revealed a moral code of happy behavior and happy living which distinguishes right from wrong. Three, the Creator holds mankind responsible for the way we treat each other. Four, all mankind lives beyond this life. And five, in the next life, mankind going to be judged for their conduct in this one. And just for the record, those are not just my thoughts. In fact, they're the fundamental points that Benjamin Franklin believed that should be taught in every single school in America to every single child in America. I hope you understand our founding fathers believed in God. They also believed that liberty they fought for all of us to enjoy and squander, had been endowed on us by our Creator. I respect that faith is deeply personal. You don't have to believe what I believe, but we as a nation better identify with our belief in God and all the love, the mercy, and the compassion that he embodies, as well as the responsibility and the restraint that he demands. No matter what your religion, I believe there is something good in all of that for all of us to enjoy. End of sermon. Amen.
Here, here, Glenn. I couldn't agree more. Now, what of it? What happens when we become a godless nation? In my mind, we descend into anarchy. Because every one of us has in us the capacity for evil. Every one of us has the capacity to do bad things, and it's within us. Perhaps, to a lesser extent, immoral things or things that go against common decency. But what holds us together, in my mind, is our beliefs in a higher power. Hence, the Ten Commandments. Now, the First Amendment guarantees no American will be forced to financially support or attend any establishment of religion. Yet liberals have really missed the mark here. Because to suit their meaning, they have constructed or construed the First Amendment to mean no religion of any kind, especially Christian religions, in any public place at all. No manger scenes at Christmas, no Ten Commandments in government buildings, no teaching creationism in schools, no mentioning God anywhere but at church or at home. I got to go to the chat room now because Richard Martin just wrote, "I can't believe I'm listening to Glenn Beck. I think my head is about to start spinning around in circles." Richard, is Glenn Beck causing you to swoon? Are you swooning over Glenn Beck? Because when a person's head starts spinning around in circles, that to me is the definition of swooning. And I think a lot of other people in the chat room would agree with that. A lot of folks who are listening are hearing that you are swooning over Glenn Beck. I mean, I like Glenn too, but I don't swoon at the sound of his voice. Oh man, one of my listeners in the chat room, a faithful listener, is swooning at the sound of Glenn Beck's voice. The next time I talk to Glenn, I am going to tell him that a grown man is swooning at the sound of his voice. Oh, okay. All right. My goodness. You, next thing you know, Richard, you're going to tell me that you have a tingle up your leg. And I hope I do not want to hear that. Now, back to the First Amendment and back to the separation of church and state. Now, when the government erects a manger scene, doesn't that represent a form of financial support? When the government puts up a monument to the Ten Commandments, but not the Five Pillars of Islam, doesn't that represent favorable or specific religion? If such acts don't constitute favoritism towards one religion or another, what would? Hagen goes on to say this. After all, Congress with the First Amendment prevents from with the Congress which the First Amendment prevents from making laws respecting the establishment of religion has nothing to do with placing the manger scene there. And certainly a judge or any government official placing a copy of the Ten Commandments on the wall in his office is not an act of Congress. Either so, that too is not a violation of our Constitution. I think that a lot of liberals have misrepresented this separation of church and state thing. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble, and a petition and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Please, carefully, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. When a school teacher or school teachers in the NEA forbid children from bowing their heads and making silent prayers and thanks for their school lunches, they're not protecting the children from children from they're not protecting the children from religious tyranny. They are repressing the free exercise of religion. When educators and the NEA forbid children from bringing their personal Bibles to school, do they really believe that they're protecting the children from religious oppression or some diabolical state religion? No, they're prohibiting the free exercise thereof. So what is occurring is just the opposite of what liberals say they're trying to do. Nowhere in the Constitution does it state separation of church and state. Nowhere in the Constitution does it state separation of church and state. Once again, the Constitution simply states Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. So if my children wanted to take a Bible to school, if my children wanted to wear a religious symbol in school, a religious t-shirt, a cross, or any symbol, if they wanted to speak of God Almighty wherever they wanted to speak, the Constitution states that it is their right to do so. And yet we have liberals who will tell you that to use the word God is a violation of their constitutional rights. The amendment prevents the government from establishing a national church, such as the Church of England, and it guarantees the right of the people to freely exercise their own religion. If an Alabama judge, Judge Roy Moore, wishes to freely exercise his respect for God's Ten Commandments by displaying them in his courtroom, that religious right is protected by the First Amendment. Should he require that any or all courtroom participants swear an oath or allegiance to the commandments, we then would have a problem. Why does the ACLU loathe any reference to God, and why does the ACLU repress the judge's free exercise of his religion? This was a court case that came into play about a year ago. Little by little, liberals are removing God from our society. And NBC is run by a bunch of liberals. That is a well-known fact. Any reference to him is opposed and suppressed. Millions of Americans do not believe in God. That's fine. It's guaranteed by the Constitution that they don't have to. Nobody has to. We, millions and millions of Christians, do not impose our will on them or demand they accept our God. We have the right to freely express our faith, guaranteed by the Constitution. Why can't the liberals leave us in peace to practice our faith? What is the issue here? Why are we living in a society where our rights are being trampled upon? John F. Kennedy himself said, "The rights of man come not from the generosity of the state, but from the hand of God," in his inaugural address, January 20th, 1961. What is it about? Why do liberals fear God? Or the mere mention of the word God? Why do liberals fear it so? Can anybody tell me? Does anybody know? Does anybody really know what time it is? Does anybody really care? What's going on? That's two songs right there. I didn't even really mean to do that. You know, there's something wrong here, folks. There's something terribly wrong here. America is descending into anarchy. America is descending into chaos. And this is all part of the dissension. It's all part of the plan, it seems. How far have we come? I am 49 years old. And although a well-known philosopher said, "May you live in interesting times," is this what he meant? Is this what he meant? We're descending bit by bit, piece by piece, into a nation that is crumbling around us. And when you have a powerful network, a powerful television network, omitting God, things are way out of hand, folks. I mean, God being omitted. I am a real Christian. That is to say, a disciple of the doctrines of Jesus. I have little doubt that our whole country will soon be rallied to the unity of our Creator. And I hope to the pure doctrine of Jesus also. Who said it? I'll give you $50,000 if you can tell me who said that. I got it around here somewhere. It was Thomas Jefferson. But yet liberals will say we were not founded on Judeo-Christian values, that on God. That this country wasn't founded that way. The highest glory of the American Revolution was this. It connected in one indissoluble bond the principles of civil government with the principles of Christianity. John Quincy Adams, the 6th U.S. president and son of John Adams. The Congress of the United States recommends and approves the Holy Bible for use in all schools. The U.S. Congress, 1782. I think the Christian religion is a divine institution, and I pray to God that I may never forget the precepts of His religion or suffer the appearance of an inconsistency in my principle and practice. James Idlewell, Supreme Court Justice. Is there any doubt that we are a Christian nation? Or do you believe like the president? And thank you for being here, Blue Sky. Thanks for coming in. I appreciate it. I'll see you a little bit later in Sean's show. Are we one nation under God, folks? One nation. Under God. Will we abandon our belief in God? Ronald Reagan said it best on socialism and religion. Don't say that we were not warned. Because Ronald Reagan spoke to this issue years ago.
Back in 1927, an American socialist, Norman Thomas, 6 times candidate for president on the Socialist Party ticket, said the American people would never vote for socialism. But he said under the name of liberalism, the American people will adopt every fragment of the socialist program. There are many ways in which our government has invaded the precincts of private citizens, the method of earning a living. But at the moment, I'd like to talk about another way, because this threat is with us, and at the moment is more imminent, more imminent, more imminent.
One of the traditional methods of imposing statism or socialism on a people has been by way of medicine. It's very easy to disguise a medical program as a humanitarian project. Most people are a little reluctant to oppose anything that suggests medical care for people who possibly can't afford it. Now, the American people, if you put it to them about socialized medicine and gave them a chance to choose,
would unhesitatingly vote against it.
We had an example of this under the Truman administration. It was proposed that we have a compulsory health insurance program for all people in the United States, and of course the American people unhesitatingly rejected this. So, with the American people on record as not wanting socialized medicine,
Congressman Ferran said,
if we can only break through and get our foot inside the door, then we can expand the program after that. Well, let's see what the socialists themselves have to say about it. They say, once the Ferran bill is passed, this nation will be provided with a mechanism for socialized medicine capable of indefinite expansion in every direction until it includes the entire population. Well, we can't say we haven't been warned.
James Madison, in 1788, speaking to the Virginia Convention, said, since the general civilization of mankind, I believe there are more instances of the abridgment of the freedom of the people by gradual and silent encroachment of those in power than by violent and sudden usurpations.
Now, in our country, under our free enterprise system, we have seen medicine reach the greatest heights that it has in any country in the world. Today, the relationship between patient and doctor in this country
is something to be envied any place.
The privacy, the care that is given to a person, the right to choose a doctor, the right to go from one doctor to the other. But let's also look from the other side at the freedom the doctor loses. The doctor begins to lose freedom.
It's like telling a lie, and one leads to another.
First, you decide that the doctor can have so many patients, they're equally divided among the various doctors by the government. But then the doctors aren't equally divided geographically. So a doctor decides he wants to practice in one town, and the government has to say to him, you can't live in that town, they already have enough doctors, you have to go someplace else. And from here, it's only a short step to dictating where he will go. This is a freedom that I wonder whether any of us have the right to take from any human being. In this country of ours took place the greatest revolution that has ever taken place in the world's history, the only true revolution. Every other revolution simply exchanged one set of rulers for another. But here, for the first time in all the thousands of years of man's relation to man, a little group of men, the founding fathers, for the first time, established the idea that you and I had within ourselves the God-given right and ability to determine our own destiny. This freedom was built into our government with safeguards. We talk democracy today. We begin to assume the aspect of majority rule is all that is needed. Well, majority rule is a fine aspect of democracy, provided there are guarantees written in to our government concerning the rights of the individual and of the minorities. What can we do about this?
Well, you and I can do a great deal.
We can say right now that we want no further encroachment on these individual liberties and freedoms.
And that you demand
a continuation of our traditional free enterprise system.
You and I can do this.
The only way we can do it is by writing to our congressman, even if we believe that he's on our side to begin with. Write to strengthen his hand. Write those letters now. Call your friends and tell them to write. If you don't, this program, I promise you, will pass just as surely as the sun will come up tomorrow. And behind it will come other federal programs that will invade every area of freedom as we have known it in this country. Until, one day, as Norman Thomas said, we will awake to find that we have socialism.
And if you don't do this, and if I do it, one of these days, you and I are going to spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it once was like in America when men were free.
It's too bad we didn't heed those words. Those are words from President Ronald Reagan many years ago, set to some really cool background music. It's unfortunate that we did not heed his words. It's unfortunate because
Most of what he said all those many years ago has occurred. We're living in interesting times and perilous times. We have a call on the line, 208. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Report.
Hi, Dr. Jones. It's Karen in Idaho.
Hey, Karen. That's you. How are the goats?
They're doing good.
Good.
Getting
good.
Me out of house and home.
Of course. That's what they do.
But when I was doing my family history, my family tree, I studied the people who came over on the Mayflower to this continent. And I actually have one man in my family tree, Mr. James Chilton. And I read the story about him and his family. They were living in England, and it was required by law that you go to the Church of England. You had no other choice. It was that or jail. And Mr. Chilton's wife and some people from the church were having an underground Bible studies, and they were studying the Word of God, and they learned that what the Bible said was different than what they were learning in church, and they realized that God's Word was more accurate. And one of the young families in the church, their baby died, and they wanted to give it a Christian burial. And Mrs. Chilton attended that little funeral, private funeral. Well, they got caught. They got arrested and thrown in jail for having a Christian burial. And they were given the choice of prison or leave the country. And Mr. James Chilton and his wife decided that their religion was that important, that they would risk their lives and leave the country. They took their youngest daughter, Mary, with them. She was 14 at the time. And they heard about this trip on the Mayflower. And so with other Christians, they crossed the ocean. I think it took them 3 months to get across the ocean. And they met with storms and disease and sickness. And the people had to live down in the bowels of the boat, which was wet and muggy. And when one of them got sick, everybody got sick. And people died on the way there. But they reached our continent. And I can't help but respect them for sacrificing their lives for their Christian beliefs. And then I think about the men who fought in the Revolutionary War and our founding fathers who they're still, you know, trying to shake off the chains of the English tyranny. And they created their own country based on their belief in God.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only been, 230 years?
Yeah.
And look how far the Mayflower, those people came over in the 1600s. Our Revolutionary War was in the 1700s. And in a short 200 years, our country has become liberalistic socialist and turned our backs on what this country was founded on. And it's just very disheartening, and it makes me wonder, well, are we going to become like the Church of England, where we are required by law to do what the government says? And are we going to have to flee to another continent to be able to practice our own religious beliefs?
I don't think so. I think America is a different kind of country. Americans are hardwired for freedom. That's what we've been raised with, we've grown up with, and it's going to be very difficult to take these freedoms away from us, the freedom of religion to practice or not to practice, the freedom of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, among other things. I would love to continue this. We'll continue on tomorrow because we're going to have part two of this discussion tomorrow. But thank you for the call. The show is almost over. Thank everyone for being in the room. Thanks for listening. And I will chat with you all later tonight for the GGT show. I am wide awake, so I will be there. It's on at 11:30. Be there or be square. Thank you all so much for being here. Cougar, Southern Sense, GGT, Karen, Beach Bum, Tesla, everybody, Richard, thank you for being here, even though you were swooning at the sound of Glenn Beck's voice. Thank you so much. I will see you guys a little bit later on tonight on the GGT show. Good night, everybody. Thank you.
was unexpected. What do I do now? Could we start again, please? I've been very hopeful so far. Now for the first time, I think we're going wrong. Hurry up and tell me, this is just a dream, or could we start again, please?
I think you've made your point now. You've even gone a bit too far to get the message home. Before it gets too frightening, we ought to call a halt. So could we start again, please?
I've been living to see you, dying to see you, but it shouldn't be like this was unexpected. What do I do now? Could we start again, please?
Could we start again, please?
I think you've made